Today, we want to discuss about food. Food is an integral part of culture. What do you want to say about this, Kiran?
Actually, I was looking at the migration of food across the globe the other day and found some interesting facts. Many staples in the international diet were once completely unknown on one side of the globe or another. For example, potatoes, first cultivated in the Andes Mountains of South America, were brought to Europe by Spanish explorers. Pineapples also originated in South America and were taken by the Spanish and Portuguese explorers to the tropical areas throughout the world, including Africa and Asia. In the growth of civilization, each country has evolved its own dietary supplements.
Yes.
And, you know, and in our work in New Zealand, and we have about 150 ethnic peoples living in the Auckland region, I've come across peoples who cannot import their staple foods into the country.
Due to some sort of regulations, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, for instance, a Nigerian community cannot import their fermented beans, which is their staple diet back in Nigeria.
Yeah.
Now, when they don't have their staple food available to them, then they fill those gaps with any stuff that...
That's available.
Which is available. And sometimes it's not actually a balanced diet.
Yeah.
And I think that it would be good for us to pursue the food habits of the different ethnic communities in New Zealand and to find out what they're doing with their food, how are they cooking, what are the staples that they're using.
And you know, it affects all of us. You know, when we first came here, it was really hard to get our own spices. There were some Indian shops. I think there was only one when I came to New Zealand, and then we had the Indian stuff, but very limited repertoire, not like now. And it took years for us to get our own food, you know, and it was not possible to get things, you know, when everybody came. And you try to make do with things, but it's not really the stuff you want. Yeah.
And food is also an important part of religious communities, our religious rituals, and what do you think about that, Asoka?
Now, food is an important part of religious observance and spiritual rituals for many different faiths. Now, that includes Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism. The role of food in cultural practices and religious beliefs is quite complex and varies among different communities. Now, let's have a look at some ways in which various religious groups include food as a vital part of their faith. Now, let's take Christianity. The various faiths of Christianity include Roman Catholics, Orthodox, and Protestants. The regulations governing food differ from one to the next, including some faiths that don't advocate any restrictions. Now, some of the facts are the ritual of the transubstantiation, changing of bread and wine into the body and blood of Jesus Christ, is believed to occur at communion. Now, Roman Catholics fast for at least 1 hour prior to communion. Fasting is sometimes considered to be praying with the body. It is believed to improve spiritual discipline by overcoming the sensations of the physical world and focusing on prayer and spiritual growth. It may serve as a way to respect those people around the world who regularly face starvation or malnutrition. Self-denial of food can also help Christians to remember that having what you want is not always the path to happiness. Now, variations of fasting or abstinence are observed by some Roman Catholics on such occasions as Lent or Good Friday. For example, some may strictly avoid meat at this time. I'm told that most Protestants observe only Easter and Christmas as feast days and don't follow ritualized fasting. Mormons avoid caffeinated and alcoholic beverages. The majority of Seventh-day Adventists don't eat meat or dairy products and are likely to avoid many condiments, including mustard. Those that do eat meat don't eat pork.
What about Judaism?
Judaism can be liberal or orthodox based on the degree of adherence to the Jewish laws. Kashrut refers to the laws pertaining to food in the Jewish religion. Kosher means that a food is permitted or clean, while anything unclean, such as pork and shellfish, is strictly forbidden. The Jewish food laws originated more than 2,000 years ago and contribute to a formal code of behavior that reinforces the identity of a Jewish community. Food forms an integral part of religion in life for a practicing Jew.
Actually, there are so many facts about these lesser-known communities and their practices about food. For instance, we realize that many people don't even know about halal food.
Yes. Oh, I must tell you an interesting story and butt in here, Kiran. Some time ago, somebody, at work we had a label on a plate saying halal. And this lady asked me, what kind of an animal is halal? And I had this really, intense urge to tell her that halal is a little animal with a tiny tail, twisted tail and long pointed ears. And I explained to her about halal. And it was quite, I was quite surprised.
And it's
that someone didn't know. She thought that halal belonged to a particular, it was the meat of a particular animal.
Yeah. I think this is one way of educating people. I did not know that, about kosher foods. I didn't know that it was that the Jews were that particular about their foods. And it's good for us to, especially with such a multicultural community like Auckland is right now, it's good to know about what people eat and what they don't eat and what their practices are. And I think this program can actually pursue this and find out a little more about the nutritive values of food as well in our later programs.
Yeah, in a later program, because I think we can talk for many, many, repeatedly we can do so many programs on the various aspects of food, nutrition and, how different cultures value food.
Especially when you have such strict dietary restrictions among communities and when people coming into New Zealand don't get the kind of food that they are supposed to eat. They eat one kind of food.
Yes.
And the ones that they don't get, they don't eat. So their diet is not balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important for us to find if there are any substitutes for people to eat the right kind of foods, if taking into account their community's dietary restrictions.
Yeah. Now, I've got some interesting facts about kosher food. Kiran, here. Now, foods must be prepared in the right way in order to be kosher. For example, animals that provide meat must be slaughtered correctly. It's probably like the halal food. The consumption of certain foods, including dairy products and fish, is subject to restrictions. For example, there are rules forbidding the mixing and consumption of dairy products with meats. And it does make sense, with bacteria growing in dairy, affecting the rotting of meat kind of thing. Now, in Judaism, I'm told that ritualized fasting is also included. Jewish fast day, which is called Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, lasts from approximately dusk till dusk. And Jewish feast days include Rosh Hashanah and Passover. I also found some interesting rules about kosher foods. Now, other than meat cannot be eaten with dairy, there is also another one. Fish, eggs, fruits, vegetables and grains can be eaten with either meat or dairy. Now, utensils that have come into contact with meat may not be used with dairy and vice versa. Utensils that have come into contact with non-kosher food may not be used with kosher food. And certain animals, again, pigs may not be eaten at all. Of the animals that may be eaten, they must be killed in accordance with Jewish law. Now, could we have something about Islamic faith, how they look at food, Kiran?
Regulations surrounding food are called halal, like I said before. Prohibited foods are called haram, which means that they are forbidden.
Yes.
It is thought that the Creator turns a deaf ear to a Muslim who eats haram food. Selected facts of Islamic diet include a list of haram foods such as pork, alcohol, foods that contain emulsifiers, as emulsifiers may be made from animal fats, tinned vegetables that include emulsifiers, frozen vegetables with sauce, particular margarines, bread or bread products that contain dried yeast. Gelatin can be made from pig, and since pork is haram, products that contain gelatin are also forbidden. Caffeinated drinks such as coffee are sometimes considered haram. Certain religious dates such as Eid ul-Fitr demand fasting from dawn to dusk. Some Muslims also choose to fast on Mondays or Thursdays or both. The month of Ramadan requires mandatory fasting during sunlight hours, as do particular dates of religious significance such as the 9th day of Zul-Hijjah. Let's talk something about more about than me. What about Hinduism? Asoka, do you know anything about Hinduism?
I thought you know more about Hinduism than me. But
okay, so let me tell you then.
Yeah.
People who practice the Hindu religion don't eat meat from animals. That is, certain people don't eat meat from animals, especially the Brahmins, who are the priestly class. Yeah. And they are very strict vegetarian. Yeah. Now, besides being vegetarian, there are certain vegetables that are forbidden. Vegetables that were imported and were considered impure are not included in the diet.
Okay, and what are they?
If you have tomatoes and certain what we call firangi vegetables, those were forbidden by, very strictly forbidden. Mm. We didn't eat garlic or ginger,
onions.
Mm. Now these were supposed to rise passions in the priests. So these were strictly forbidden. Mm. Of course, the flesh of any kind, eggs, was forbidden.
Mm. And that includes fish, because when in a Western kind of way, if you look at vegetarianism, people think you don't eat meat, but you can have fish and shellfish and whatnot. But that's not so, is it?
No, no meat of any kind, no chicken, no fish, no eggs, no garlic, no onions, none of those forbidden vegetables like beetroots and tomatoes and any of these what we called firangi vegetables, that is the foreign vegetables, were not...
Firangi is foreign.
Yeah. They're not permitted.
Yeah.
And if you actually look at it, I was talking about this the other day at the Auckland Regional Council. People who crossed the seven seas were cut off from the community.
Yeah.
They were considered impure. So likewise, foods that came from those countries that across the seven seas were considered impure. And people didn't eat that. Actually, even today, many of the old folk in India don't eat those kind of foods.
Mm.
Now, there are, of course, spiritual connotations to all these. And they say that if a Hindu consumes animal flesh, they accumulate the karma of the act that needs to be balanced through good actions and learning in this life or the next.
Mm.
That selected other facts about the Hindu diet is that food is God, Brahman.
Yes.
And it's thought to be an actual part of the Brahman rather than simply the Brahman symbol.
Mm.
Foods contain energies which could be positive or negative, and these were like the sound waves that can be absorbed by a person who eats them. And there is a saying in amongst the Hindus that you are what you eat.
What you eat, yeah.
According to the religion, violence or pain inflicted on another living being rebounds on you as part of your karma. In keeping with the aim to avoid this violence or pain to any living organism, vegetarianism is advocated, but it's not compulsory.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, among the lower castes which are permitted to eat animal flesh, any auspicious ritual or like a wedding or a name, namkaran, that is christening, those parties don't include meat at all because it's an auspicious time.
Yeah.
So any auspicious ceremony amongst any kind of Hindu community does not include meat at all. So it's part of a religious, spiritual kind of a thing. Yes. And that's exactly what my point was, that when people travel and immigrate to countries like New Zealand and they don't find the dietary staples that they normally find in their own countries, then they tend to substitute it with things which are actually don't balance that diet.
And then the food patterns change, and you know what I find is that a lot of people, the foods that are available, you know, are not here. So you tend to use substitutes, which may not be good. And then the type of foods that when we make our own food, you use substitutes. And sometimes they may not be the healthiest option.
No.
So you use, and things are so abundant, so you tend to eat those special foods much more often.
There's an example in the Pacific peoples. In the Pacific, there was hardly any fat in their dietary staple. Yes. It was mostly starch and carbohydrate. Mm. So they had a gene which is called the fat, it's called a thrifty gene. Mm-hmm. Which enabled the Pacific peoples to retain whatever little fat that came into their diet and store it in their body. When the Pacific peoples immigrated into New Zealand and they had this corned beef, they started eating corned beef.
Is it only after they came here?
Yeah.
Oh, they're
perfect. If you look at Samoans in Samoa, they're healthy people with starch diets and very little meat in their diets.
They probably had more fish in their diets than corned beef, and corned beef is full of preservatives and all that, isn't it?
So when they came here and they forgot their starchy diets and they ate a lot of meat and corned beef, they started putting on weight. That's because of their thrifty gene, which actually made their bodies hoard all the fat that they ate.
Mm-mm.
So that was an unhealthy diet.
Yes.
And it was sad because they ate that because their staple foods like taro and all the others, these things take a long time to cook and prepare. And they just went and bought cans of corned beef and ate it.
Which is easier. And then when you have to work hard and maintain a family and all that.
So that is exactly what happens to most other peoples as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's with the, with the Muslims or with the Jews or with the Hindus or with Buddhists. We haven't yet spoken about Buddhism, Asoka. So, since you are a Buddhist, would you like to say a little bit on the dietary rules of Buddhism?
Yeah, the dietary rules of Buddhism, which is more life philosophy than a religious doctrine, depend on which branch of Buddhism is practiced and in what country. Now, some of the facts are that in his lives on earth, Lord Buddha cycled through various animal forms before he took on the form of human being. That is why Buddhism advocates vegetarianism. Now, that doesn't mean to say that all Buddhists are strict vegetarians, because over the years, people have changed their habits. And similar to the Hindu concept of karma, Buddhism proposes that violence or pain inflicted on others will rebound on you, further strengthening the need for a vegetarian lifestyle. Some Buddhists believe that the cause of human aggression is violence against animals. Now, Buddhists avoid meat but not dairy products, while others only shun beef. Religious dates vary from one religion to the next. Now, Mahayana Buddhism, for example, celebrates three festivals for the birth, enlightenment and death of Buddha, while Theravada Buddhists observe all three events on a single day. Now, Buddhist monks tend to fast in the afternoon and partake their last meal on the day of the day at noon. After this, they only consume water or tea, and even things like milk and soups are considered to be nutritious, so they don't consume. If they have tea or coffee is not usually partaken, but if they have tea, they wouldn't have milk in it. And Buddhist monks and nuns aren't allowed to cultivate, store or cook their own food, because they must rely on alms, which are donations from believers. Now, this sometimes includes meats, as monks and nuns aren't allowed to ask for specific foods. Now, in Buddhism, there are certain things that a Buddhist should not do, and killing is one of the five precepts, and it also includes that people should not be in the business of selling meat or selling live animals. So these are things that are said is not kosher for a Buddhist.
I've heard amongst the Tibetan Buddhists, though they don't kill the animal or kill fish themselves,
yes,
they buy and eat. So are these Buddhist practices common?
I mean, whether you kill it or not, or what I feel is that even if somebody else kills it, it's killed for food. So
my question was, do all Buddhists across the world have the same practices?
No. There are two types of Buddhism. You know, what's practiced in countries like Japan and China is different to what's practiced in Burma, Sri Lanka, Thailand. Now, for example, the Thai Buddhist, Thai or Burmese or Sri Lankan Buddhist priests, they're not allowed to marry. You know, it's pretty strict. They've got thousands and thousands of rules and regulations. But in Japan and, you know, that part of the world, the Mahayana Buddhist priests, they can get married and live. You know, they're like Anglican priests. So there are so many differences. Yeah.
Mm.
Now, let's leave religion aside and have a look at some other cultures. Oh, I found some interesting facts from China. The philosophy of yin and yang. Now, this lies in the heart of Chinese culture. And apparently, the first references to yin and yang came from the five classic works compiled and edited by Confucius. Taken literally, yin and yang mean the dark side and sunny side of a hill. Now, people commonly think of yin and yang as opposing forces. Even the signal is two fishes, head to tail. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Now, I was very interested in this because there is so much similarity with Ayurveda or the Indian, you know, the beliefs from our part of the world as well. Now, the Chinese believe that problems arise when the two forces are battling, but when there is an imbalance between them in the environment. Floods, divorce, and even a fire in the kitchen can be attributed to disharmony in the forces of yin, yes, and yang. Now, let's have a look at the concept of yin and yang that relates to food, because our program is about food and we've diverted enough, I think. Links to this philosophy can be found in any Chinese dish, apparently from stir-fried beef with broccoli to sweet and sour pork. There is always a balance in color, flavors, and textures. Now, certain foods are thought to be having yin or cooling properties, mm-hmm, while others have warm yang properties. Now, we'll talk about that from the Indian point of view later. The challenge is to consume a diet that contains a healthy balance between the two, which makes sense. When treating illness, an oriental physician will frequently advise dietary changes in order to restore healthy balance between the yin and yang in the body. For example, let's say you are suffering from heartburn causing by consuming too much spicy yang foods. Instead of antacids, you're likely to take home a prescription for herbal teas to restore the yin forces. In our part of the world, we may use cooling foods such as yogurt or curd or sago boiled in coconut milk in my country in a similar manner. Similarly, coughs or flu are more likely to be treated with dietary changes than antibiotics or cough medicines. Now, interestingly, cooking methods also have more of a yin or yang property. For example, boiling, poaching, and steaming are said to have yin qualities. Now, that's the healthier option. And deep frying, roasting, and stir frying are said to have yang qualities. I think Jenny Craig would agree on this as well. Different foods are categorized under yin and yang. For example, bean sprouts, cabbage, carrots, crabs, cucumber, duck, tofu, watercress, and water are among the yin foods, while bamboo, beef, chicken, egg, ginger, glutinous rice, mushrooms, sesame oil, and wine are yang foods. This is quite similar to the heating and cooling foods theory from our parts of the world, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Hmm. I remember that when I was little, my grandmother used to talk about vata, pitta,
yes,
kapha, and something else.
Yeah.
And each person's constitution was supposed to be one of these. It meant heating, cooling,
yes,
cold, or hot.
Hot.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
And so each one of our dietary, you know, our dietary habits had to go according to our constitutions.
Yes.
And there's a whole big science around it.
Yeah. And in Sri Lanka, we have many foods that are said to be heaty. Now, prawns, beef, crab are said to be in this category. Now, when we cook prawns or crab, we add a handful of leaves of the drumstick tree, which is said to be balancing the food and making it less heaty. Now, we as kids were also advised not to eat yogurt if you eat pork. These granny's advices can be explained by using food science now.